So today, Melissa and I will be trying to say a few words about the sixth case in the Blue Cliff record. Yinmen's every day is a good day. The case. Yinmen said, I don't ask you about before the 15th day. Try to say something about after the 15th day. Yinmen himself answered for everyone, every day is a good day. And now the verse. He throws away one, picks up seven. Above, below, and in the four directions, there is no comparison. Placidly walking along, he treads down the sound of the flowing stream. His relaxed gaze descries the tracks of flying birds. The grasses grow thick, the mists overhang. Round Subhuti's cliff, the flowers make a mess. I snap my fingers. How lamentable is Shunyata? Don't make a move. If you move, 30 blows. So this ancient case is a traditional case on which to give a teisho after one has received transmission. And so Yinmen asks not about before the 15th day, which in the Chinese lunar year is the full moon, and that being the symbol of awakening. He asks, try to say something about after the 15th day. And I especially like that he says, try to say something. So this trying to say, in the notes to the case, it talks about how Buddha Shakyamuni, after his great awakening, wasn't so sure about going out into the world and trying to convey his realization. And he spent 3 weeks contemplating whether to do that. And lucky for us, he made the decision he did. And Yinmen himself, his responses in the koans are always very direct, very even terse, one, two, three words. And they usually are valued because they don't admit of any explanation. The thinking mind cannot penetrate them. So this try to say, I don't take it as a challenge or a contest, because that is not what the practice is about. It is more an encouragement to try to share with others what truth we may have managed to uncover for ourselves in our own personal way. Because it is not enough to awaken. Yinmen's not interested in the 15th. He wants to know about after the 15th. It is imperative that we throw our lot in with random folks, like we all have done here, and lose ourselves in the work. This is what is required to live a life of awakening. It's not an experience. It's an entire life lived in communion, lived in care. And Dogen talks about this, I believe, when he says, give life to our lives. How do we give life to our lives? And he's talking about our ordinary, everyday life, exactly as it is for each one of us. It is so easy for us to avoid that through inattention, where we can kind of be in a drugged state from time to time. We can also kill our lives by our devaluing and discriminating. So every time we don't want the rice or the tea, we kill the rice and the tea. Like in this morning's chant, when we want the flowers to have more color, we kill those flowers. And so it is up to us to find out how to give life to our life just as it is. A practice for each one of us, personal, and a practice that continues for a lifetime. I think this koan here, every day is a good day, is one that clearly does not admit of any type of intellectual understanding, and seems more like one that maybe an artist or a poet could convey so much better than words. Again, in the notes, it's the commentary. It says, when Yen Men utters a phrase, it must be returned to the source. Anything but this will always be phony. So I took this as a challenge to tell you a story about my personal entry to this koan, which will not be yours, but maybe it will convey some sense of it better than me singing like a lecturer. And so there was a time many years ago when my sister's two-year-old son was killed when he fell out the window of their house. And I was on my way to her house before the funeral, and I stopped at a convenience store to get a bottle of water to bring with me. And the person at the cash register, who of course knew nothing of my life, told me to have a good day. And I was so jarred by this statement. How could I possibly have a good day? And really angry at this person for no reason, that he would utter such a banal statement on such a momentous day. And it took me many years, probably a decade, before I ever told anyone to have a good day. And so then when I got to my sister's house, she was there, and I found her in the bathroom sitting on the little stool that the children use to stand up on and wash their face at the sink. And she was crumpled over, her hair hanging down, and she just looked at me and said, could you brush my hair? And there we were, you know, in the sunlight streaming through the bathroom window, and my sister's blonde hair, and me brushing it, both of us in a sea of grief, which no words could possibly describe. And yet, there it was, even in that. So it is not necessary to find a way of living a spiritual life. It is only necessary to live the life that we have. That is Buddha's life. I love this line from Dogen that we must be like, I'll paraphrase it, the tigress who trusts the mountain where she dwells. And the person who has taught me the most about this mountain will speak next.
Sitting here right now with all of us in this room, I'm so touched by everyone's practice, by Diane's words just now, by the story of combing the hair. And I wonder if maybe you can feel something in your own heart opening to this possibility that in the midst of whatever is happening, there is something that we can barely talk about, and yet which gives us life. This practice is not about attaining anything. It's about realizing something. Right now, in this moment, what can you realize? Is your mind in its continual desire to protect you, trying to take you away? Are you thinking about things that have happened to you? Are you thinking about lunch? Are you thinking about something that isn't here right now? Well, here's the wonderful thing about Zen. Even those thoughts are it. The things that make up the fine day, the good day that Yunmen tells us about, that Diane just so beautifully explained to us, demonstrated for us. We sometimes say that the world is constantly offering itself to us. But we often have our hands closed so tight around our ideas about what it means to be human that the offering is neglected. The offering is not felt or seen or heard or tasted or touched or smelled. Might as well be complete. So this kind of receiving, this is what Yunmen is pointing us to, isn't it? Not to be satisfied with anything that we think might be our practice, that we think might be Zen. Those of you who practice with koans know the wonderful feeling of passing a koan and then receiving another koan. We're not ever done. There's no finish line until the last moment of our exhalation, which will come to us all, but isn't happening right now. I was so touched yesterday by Cheryl's little mini Dharma talk to us about the carp of the Eastern Sea and Yunmen. Again, Yunmen, when Josh and Kate talked about the koan, they partly chose it, at least that's what they told me, because it was about Yunmen. It had one of his comments that that doesn't leave us any room. And this carp of the Eastern Sea, you hit the nose with the fan and everything pours forward. And Cheryl's understanding of that, which then became all of our understanding, that this is what life is about. And in the verse from Hongzhi that is part of this case, he begins by saying, he throws away one, picks up seven. We cling and we cling and we cling to the one thing, but just a little bit of a touch, a word, the sunlight pouring through, meeting the eyes of a spiritual friend, and everything pours forth in torrents. It's just waiting to do that. Our job, as I said earlier, is not to become something else, not to learn more stuff. Enough already with the learning stuff. It's about seeing through that effortfulness that makes us think that we're not enough, that this moment is not enough. It must be somewhere else. That this life is not enough, but maybe next year I'll finally join the gym and I'll have awakening and I'll pass all the koans. That's the mind protecting itself from the torrent of things pouring forth. The torrent of things pouring forth is all around us. Later in the verse, it was just beautiful hearing this verse once again from Diane's voice. I had read it earlier, but I don't know, it had more of a, it got me in a different way. When he says, placidly walking along, he treads down the sound of the flowing stream. Those of you who do the miscellaneous koans might recognize that one as crossing a stream, right? What? How do we do that? How do we engage fully in the crossing of the stream? His relaxed gaze decries the tracks of flying birds. Not so complicated. We cross the stream, we look into the sky, and we see the birds flying. Could this be our life? Could this be what's been hidden from us because we were looking somewhere else? As Wu Men, the compiler of the Gateless Gate, says, we're always looking south to find the North Star. It's right in front of our faces, and it takes a little bit of effort. It's not just about receiving, but it's not the kind of effort that we have been engaged in most of our adult lives, to be better, to be improved, to be the next iteration of me. It's about just that little tap of the fan on the nose of the carp. It's about deciding that I'm going to spend the weekend sitting upright and still in the middle of everything, in the middle of life and death, in the middle of pain and joy. Diane's story reminded me, and I'd forgotten, not quite as tragic a story, so not meant to compare, because no grief is comparable to any other grief. But the day after the election this year, I had an experience of grief. Maybe you didn't, but I did. So I'm just talking about myself here. And I had an appointment with my eye doctor. And I didn't want to get out of bed. I hadn't slept. And I just felt like everything had just exploded into the biggest shit storm I've ever experienced, which isn't really true, but it felt that way. And when I went to check in, the woman checking me in, as she usually did, brightly said, "Hello, how are you?" with a big smile on her face. And I felt terrible. And I thought to myself, this woman deserves my honesty. And I said, "You know." And she just dropped her smile and really looked at me. And she said, "I do know." And then the woman in the carol next to her said, "Oh, me too." And this whole practice, everywhere I went, "How are you?" "Well, you know, I do know." And finally, I got to my ophthalmologist. Same thing. "How are you? Nice to see you." And I said, "Well, it's been a tough morning." And he looked at me and he said, "Are you okay? Are you sick?" And I said, "Not so much. It's not really about me personally. It's about what happened last night." And he looked at me and he said, "I know." And maybe that's all it is. The "I know," the contact, the touch, the recognition that we're all in this life together. And that if we cling to something so tightly about our self-definition, the way the world is, we miss the rain coming down in torrents. We miss the seven, which is just a way I read in Chinese of saying a whole lot. So one day, Yunmen asked his assembly, "I don't speak about before the 15th. Come tell me, try to say something about after the 15th. And nobody could say anything, so he answered for them. Every day is a good day. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable and we'll have our Dharma dialogue, and this morning, as is our new custom, we are joined by our Dharma holder, Steve Wallace, and Kate is sitting in the group with us, and Josh is sitting over to the side, and just the three of us will be the respondents to any of your comments or questions. Holly.
Particularly to Diane, I want to meet your story. Thank you for sharing your hairbrushing memory, because it reminded me of a good day with my dad. In the hospital. It was the second to last day. I came in and had been called to come and visit because he was back in the hospital. And, hospital hallways are pretty weird. They're not normal. Or maybe they are. They weren't normal for me. But I navigated the hallways and found my dad in the ICU with a tube in his throat. And the first sight of him, he met my eyes and he was terrified, and wanted it out, just wanted it gone. And I met his eyes and I said, "Do you want them to take the tube away?" And he nodded. And so we met with the palliative care people and I conveyed his message. And I went and I held his head with my hand. I had his hair, the hair just in my hand, and we just looked at each other. And they took the tube away. And it was a good day because it was one of the last days that I was with Dad.
Thank you. And, this good day that we're talking about and Diane's beautiful story will evoke in so many of us these stories. It reminds me of the story of the Buddha and the mustard seed. And to bring that story in, Holly, we can feel it, that the quality of your good day right now, right this moment. I don't know if anybody saw Holly hold out her hand and gesture as she cupped her father's head. That didn't happen sometime in the past. It happened in our witnessing right now. So let's keep this quality of feeling the poignancy of all of our losses in this moment and how the good day manifests itself. Thank you.
One of the things that I remind myself sometimes that grief is a measure of love, and even the deepest grief, the most inconsolable grief, is a measure of the depth of the love.
Beautifully said.
I think there's a Rumi poem that grief is the garden of the soul.
Yeah. and how there's this tendency to box things in, you know, grief bad, right, love good. But as you're pointing to, Fran, it's all one thing. And this is the dropping one, realizing seven. You know, mm-hmm. Things get fuller, don't they?
Yeah. And so, of course, we grieve the loss of the ones that we love. And you know, the only way around that is to not have the love, right? Mm-hmm. And as most of you know, the two things are really two sides of the exact same thing. And to put our heart out there and to love means that, you know, our love is going to fall apart. You know, as we were saying the five remembrances today, it's just, you know, that part of it was really, you know, we're going to lose everyone that we care about. And that doesn't mean that we shouldn't care. But that's the only way to prevent that feeling of loss. And how wonderful that, you know, we get to live and love and even participate in loss.
When I recite that precept about how we'll lose everyone we love, I also think not just about death, but about how many people have drifted away from me, or I've drifted away from, or how I may have changed, or they may have changed, and everything is so transitory. Yes, the truth of impermanence is so apparent. And there is this quality, as Steve and Fran were talking about it, you know, that this really is the garden of our life, you know, the flowers come and spring and they die in the fall and go back and nourish the soil that brings more flowers and more death. So to be willing to stand with this, like that's why I like the line about the tigress, you know, who trusts the mountain where she dwells. You know, there is this trust that the practice helps us to cultivate in this mountain that has no place, no geographic place, only places in our heart. And that's where we can dwell with great activity and great, just like the tiger. Yeah, Eric.
Thank you, Diane and Melissa, for expounding on that. And Diane, thank you for bringing that story in. I think you know, most everybody's met some sort of tragedy in some way, and you know, for me it was like a very sudden thing, and you know, one day you're doing your thing and the next day you're planning a funeral. And from your story, somewhere in there I feel like there's this our meeting the iron wall, you know, that on one hand this horrible thing has happened, and on the other hand I still have to go to a convenience store and get a bottle of water. And when I'm just doing my daily thing in life, it's like, well, this doesn't, I got to run in here and get this and leave. And somehow when I look back at those times, I'm like, look, what an odd thing it is. Like, I got to gas up the car and just, oh, I forgot this and I got to do that. And it's just such a, just a meeting of that in a way. It's like life does keep going. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that, kind of couching it in that way too.
Yeah, thanks for your interpretation too, your view of perspective. That's a new way for me to look at it too. You know, I just suddenly saw the water bottle in a different way. Mm. So thank you. Beautiful. Deb, her hand.
Deb had her hand. Thank you. Okay.
I was really touched in something that we were reading today, and it comes up for me in what you're saying too, that you really can't make a mistake, whatever you're thinking or feeling. And one of my favorite quotes is from Rumi, and it's appear as you are, be as you appear. And it really, it often brings me back whenever you speak about mindfulness, and about not separating delusion from enlightenment and awakening. That appearing as you are and being as you appear, especially to yourself, is so profound, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, you would have missed that moment. And even if you did miss it when it happened, it was still there for you.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Sometimes in recollection, it doesn't matter.
We don't believe in this time travel and everything, but it's really happening.
Yeah. I believe in it. Thank you, Deb. That's great. Did Marsha?
And Julie.
Marsha? Mm-hmm. Did you have your hand up? Oh, okay. Then it goes to Julie.
Yeah, it was having an interesting set of reactions. I was listening to our tone of voice, how we came very slow and comforting and holding that tender part. And I want to say yes to that and also to the part of this koan that speaks to the sword and running into the wall and the cry before you get to that tender part of, every day is a good day!
So that was coming up for me too. Right? So terrible things happen. The death of my father was very much like the story that Holly told, only I wasn't able to make that connection at his last moment, and it shattered me, you know, his dying like that, and my sister being killed just shattered me, right? No redeeming quality then or now, but you know, that this good day is not the opposite of a bad day, right? And this is something other than, you know, good or bad or finding the bright spot in the middle of being shattered, right? Because sometimes you're just shattered, and it makes us who we are with all our bruises and patches and parts missing. And
Yeah. Thank you for that demonstration.
Yeah.
And I think it's a little bit connected to what both Deb and Harry and Fran were saying, you know, that this interpenetration of everything, grief and sadness, we have to keep going on with our life. There are no mistakes, right? That this fabric of life is so rich and complex. The danger is in narrowing it to these two categories of good or bad, to gentle or strong, as if one is better than the other. They're just what's arising, and this is what I feel like Zen practice allows us to do. You know, the quality of a bottle of water in your hand is not to be missed, but we miss it all the time. Mm-hmm. And then the missing it is not a problem. Mm. You know, the having a terrible, terrible experience, it's terrible. It shatters us. And that's living life fully as that. This is not something to figure out, but we live into it, I believe. It's to be lived. Pierce?
Yes, thank you, Diane and Melissa. A number of things stayed with me from your talk. I especially like the Dogen quote about living your life and the sort of little shock that it contains. Oh, I'm not, actually. And you use the word devaluation also, which is something that we do. And when Melissa began to speak, you gave a list of thoughts that we might be thinking at this moment, many of which I was thinking, that are drawing us away from the present moment and from living life fully. But then you said, those thoughts are also it. Mm-hmm. And this for me is the real mercy of Zen in some sense, you know, that I don't have to have a better life than I have. I don't have to make it better. I don't have to feel better about it.
It's so
I'm glad you think it's so funny.
I think we're laughing with you, Pierce.
It's so important.
Yeah. I just have to live it. Yeah.
So, not needing to feel a particular way about it. You know, so this is has been one of the primary things for me in my practice lately, is giving myself absolute permission to feel however it is that I feel with about whatever is arising, you know? And of course, you know, we would like things to be different, and a lot of the times we're sleepwalking through our life, and in that moment of sleepwalking, we are fully participating in this sleepwalking, and if we can really see ourselves doing that, that is fully the practice, right? To wake up to my sleepwalking.
And it's so, I think it's amusing. I know why I laughed. I don't know why anybody else laughed. But you can't land anywhere. So I'm having all these thoughts about things should be different, and, you know, it's taking me away, blah, blah, blah. And then the thoughts themselves are it. And then the mind wants to just go, well, if the thoughts themselves are it, then there's nothing to do. But actually, so it just keeps seesawing back and forth. That's because minds make distinctions. You know, the judge, the inner critic, is always saying good, bad. And in Zen, it just won't fly. You know, and if you come in with anything to Doksan and you're very, very sure of it, it's often the case, not always, that the teacher will take you to that other side, if you're willing, take you to the other side, not because you're wrong in that view, but just to not have you be stuck in the view, right? Because this is about aliveness, so it's fluid and the static stuff is it too. There's no way to talk about it, which I think is what Diane pointed to when Yunmen said, try to say something about after the 15th. It's impossible. And yet, here we are, all of us. Yeah. I think it was Jess it? Yeah. Yeah, Jess and then.
Thank you. One of the words that came into my head as I was listening to everyone's story, you just said it was willingness and how.
Just speak up a little bit, Jess.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Willingness, and the willingness to allow for the good thing to unfold, even if the mind has decided this isn't good. Mm-hmm. And just really appreciating that. And I had a really bad cold for about 3 weeks that ended right before the sheen or whatever. Didn't bring that to you. But during that time, it was like I didn't have the time to take off of work, and I kept thinking that I couldn't do a good job if I didn't feel good. And then I got to learn that didn't have to be true, actually. I could do a fine job when I wasn't feeling good. Sometimes I do a bad job when I'm feeling great. So just to kind of notice the willingness to allow for things to unfold, and sometimes that's just a challenge for my mind. It wants things to unfold in a certain way. Right. That's an okay way. The other ways aren't. And so just, I guess, not doing as much. You just kind of, again, observing. So thank you.
Not doing as much. That sounds like a good advice for all of us.
And as you were talking, Jess, I got this mental image. I often see things in pictures and think in pictures. And I saw all the, like a trash yard full of good, bad, good, bad, good, bad. You know, like it just doesn't cohere, really, in that way, and yet we try to do that. It's just all this trash. You know, I loved when you said, sometimes when I'm feeling good, I don't do a good job. Well, who knows what that even means, but I knew what you meant. Mm-hmm. And yet, right, and yet, we have to be careful in that spot. Yes, maybe Laura will be the last one.
I've been thinking about how, something I often think about, is how conditioned we are to feeling like we should feel a certain way. And how many times have we heard our friends say, and heard ourselves say, I really shouldn't feel this way. I really shouldn't think what I think, or whatever. And we are mostly not here. We're mostly not sitting. We're mostly in the world where greeting cards and the way we talk to each other seems to reinforce the idea that if we aren't happy, we should find some way that we should be happy, and what's wrong with us. And so when I come to Sesshin, I mean, I think one of the reasons we laugh a lot is this sense of relief. Oh, thank heavens! That isn't true. Actually, how I feel is how I feel. This is the reality. And, I don't get any demerits for feeling, and nor does anyone else. So hopefully when we leave Sesshin, we can bring this with us and bring this to our interactions with other people, and just to help reassure ourselves and other people that that our experience is very real and it's okay.
Mm-hmm. And I think Melissa's telling about her interaction with the ophthalmologist, you know, that's how we bring it to other people. How are you feeling? Mm-hmm. that's how we show up.
And we have to be so careful in this place, because it could sound like a good idea to go out into the world and carry what we've learned here. But what I'm beginning to clarify for myself these days is that the reason we practice Zazen in this formal style is not to learn things to remember for when we're out in the world, but to kind of have the body kick in all these moments so that we don't have to think, now I'm going to try to say, or I'm going to, right? You know, I can see your face.
I certainly agree with that.
Yeah.
But the more we have the experience of being present,
exactly,
with what is,
we're
more likely to be able to bring that into our life in general.
I had another image when you were talking, but this was of Judy Garland singing Forget Your Troubles and Just Be Happy. And she, and if you, has anybody heard that recording? It's just a classic. She's miserable, and you can hear it in every word that she sings. And it's because it brings those things together. It's more like every day is a good day. And this is our. She's genuinely not convinced. She's genuinely coming forth from her pain and suffering and drug addiction and miserableness. Forget your troubles and just get happy. Oh, man. Right? And so I think what you're pointing to, what I heard you say and what I resonated with is this, we have the capacity to be authentic. And we learn how to do it here, and then we need to remember.
That is what I. Yeah. That is what I mean. And the relief, the tremendous relief. And to me, it's amusing that I have to keep experiencing it over and over. And it's like, oh yes.
Yeah. Right. There's the oh yes.
It's okay.
And I just want to correct something I just said. So not to remember intellectually, but to remember in the sense of the root word of remember, which is to come into the body again. Always come into the body, and you know, that's so. Come to Sesshin all the time.
Everyone.
Yeah. So, anything? Yeah. Thank you all.
Thank you.